Some Hope by Edward St. Aubyn. Read by Alex Jennings. Chapter 1. Patrick woke up, knowing he had dreamed, but unable to remember the contents of his dream. He felt the familiar ache of trying to track something that had just disappeared off the edge of consciousness, but could still be inferred from its absence, like a whirlwind of scrap paper left by the passage of a fast car. The obscure fragments of his dream, which seemed to have taken place beside a lake, were confused with the production of Measure for Measure he had seen the night before with Johnny Hall. Despite the director's choice of a bus depot as the setting for the play, nothing could diminish the shock of hearing the word mercy so many times in one evening. Perhaps all his problems arose from using the wrong vocabulary, he thought, with a brief flush of excitement that enabled him to throw aside the bed covers and contemplate getting up. He moved in a world in which the word charity, like a beautiful woman shadowed by her jealous husband, was invariably qualified by the words lunch, committee, or ball. Compassion, nobody had any time for, whereas leniency made frequent appearances in the form of complaints about short prison sentences. Still, he knew that his difficulties were more fundamental than that. He was worn out by his lifelong need to be in two places at once, in his body and out of his body, on the bed and on the curtain pole, in the vein and in the barrel, one eye behind the eye patch and one eye looking at the eye patch, trying to stop observing by becoming unconscious, and then forced to observe the fringes of unconsciousness and make darkness visible, cancelling every effort, but spoiling apathy with restlessness, drawn to puns but repelled by the virus of ambiguity, inclined to divide sentences in half, pivoting them on the qualification of a but longing to unwind his coiled tongue like a gecko's and catch a distant fly with unwavering skill. Desperate to escape the self-subversion of irony and say what he really meant, but really meaning what only irony could convey. Not to mention, thought Patrick, as he swung his feet out of bed, the two places he wanted to be tonight, at Bridget's party and not at Bridget's party. And he wasn't in the mood to dine with people called Bossington Lane. He would ring Johnny and arrange to have dinner with him alone. He dialed the number, but immediately hung up, deciding to call again after he had made some tea. He had scarcely replaced the receiver when the phone rang. Nicholas Pratt was ringing to chastise him for not answering his invitation to Cheatley.
"No need to thank me," said Nicholas Pratt, "for getting you invited to this glittering occasion tonight. I owe it to your dear papa to see that you get into the swim of things."
"I'm drowning in it," said Patrick. "Anyhow, you prepared the way for my invitation to Cheatley by bringing Bridget down to Lacoste when I was 5. Even then one could tell she was destined to command the heights of society."
"You were much too badly behaved to notice anything as important as that," said Nicholas. "I remember you once in Victoria Road giving me a very sharp kick in the shins. I hobbled through the hall, trying to hide my agony so as not to upset your sainted mother. How is she, by the way? One never sees her these days."
"It's amazing, isn't it? She seems to think there are better things to do than going to parties."
"I always thought she was a little peculiar," said Nicholas wisely.
"As far as I know, she's driving a consignment of 10,000 syringes to Poland. People say it's marvellous of her, but I still think that charity begins at home." "She could have saved herself the journey by bringing them round to my flat," said Patrick.
"I thought you'd put all that behind you," said Nicholas.
"Behind me, in front of me. It's hard to tell here in the grey zone."
"That's rather a melodramatic way to talk at 30.
"Well, you see," sighed Patrick, "I've given up everything, but taken nothing up instead."
"You could make a start by taking my daughter up to Cheatley."
"I'm afraid I can't," lied Patrick, who couldn't bear Amanda Pratt. "I'm getting a lift from someone else."
"Oh, well, you'll see her at the Bossington Lanes," said Nicholas, "and we'll see each other at the party."
Patrick had been reluctant to accept his invitation to Cheatley for several reasons. One was that Debbie